because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
God bless.
I'm Steve Walder.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol. Well, J.R., the governor rolled out what will be a centerpiece mm-hmm. of the State of the State, the College Affordability Plan. Let's run through the elements quickly. It removes the cap on the tax deduction for interest payments on student loans, $1 million more for grants to attend technical colleges, $450,000 for emergency grants to UW system and tech college students, two new state workers to increase the number of on-the-job internships, and require the teaching of financial literacy your first semester, tech college, and UW system. Small ball or big deal?
It's an interesting component to what he's been doing in general with college, which is basically a tuition freeze that's kept costs frozen for in-state undergrads.
Yeah, it's his press release. He said our freeze saved $6,300 on the average resident undergrad. Excuse me, go ahead.
And his approach is that he's not a big fan of the Democrats' plan, which is the refinancing authority. So they want to create an authority that would, if you have a loan, outstanding loan balance, you're out there, been paying them for 5, 10 years, whatever, and you want to get a lower rate, go to this finance authority and you can get a rate lower, knocked down. What the governor said is he's not convinced that's going to work or that's been successful other places. So this is his answer to this question, because this is becoming a national issue, if you will.
Sure it is.
For a lot of folks.
Well, and in a statement, Democratic Senate leader Senator Schilling said, Wisconsin, I didn't know this, Jay, Wisconsin now is the third highest number of college graduates with debt in the nation, with over 800,000 Wisconsin residents owing more than $19 billion in student loan debt. Democrats want to make higher education a priority again. And Democratic Reps Sparca and Mason, more than 1 million Wisconsinites are currently burdened by student loan debt, yet Governor Walker's plan would help just a small fraction of those borrowers. Is this a live issue
in
terms of the campaigns?
Yes. This is something that Democrats are trying to appeal to middle-class voters, if you will, that we're looking out for your interest. We know you're having problems. Because people have such high student loan debt, they're delaying purchases of cars, homes, all these things that other folks did at a younger age, they're having to put off till later on to take care of these loans. That's an issue. And Walker and Republicans say, well, look, we've frozen tuition. We're taking care of students. We're paying attention to what they need, which is relief up front. So I think it's not the driving issue at all this fall. But it's something that gets the attention of millennials for sure, and people who are in college. Absolutely.
Well, the Gov's office scores it at costing $7.65 million in the current biennium. Voss said yesterday he expects it to pass. Can the Democrats vote against this because arguing that it's too small, we want more bigger fundamental change?
I can't do their strategy for them. It'd be an interesting vote on the floor if they did. Now, I'm sure they'll bring up their, try to pull, whatever day they take this package up, they'll try and pull their higher debt, lower debt, higher authority bill. I'm blanking on the name of it. But
it would create a new authority.
Yes. They will bring that up on the floor that day and try and pull it, or try to pull it to the floor and have a vote on that. And then they'll go on the campaign trail and say, look, these guys are refusing to give you this lower rate that we think is a good idea for you.
Okay. But we agree this is going to be a centerpiece of what we're going to hear from the governor on Tuesday's State
jobs,
of the State.
Jobs in the economy.
Okay. Next subject. Okay, JR, before, like, October, had you ever heard of Wisconsin's Public Records Boards?
No.
You and I have more than 40 years covering this Capitol.
No.
And, okay, but, so then you have this major league kerfuffle. Mm-hmm. In August, a meeting without notice, it adopts a change on transitory online records. Now, coming on the heels of the 11th hour state budget amendment to gut the open records law, this thing just explodes. So the Public Records Board then has to convene this week and say, oh, about that August vote, well, we're going to cancel it. We're going to rescind it. But I want us to hear both from the chairman, Matthew Blessing, and from the governor's appointee, Carl Busing, who's a Sheboygan attorney who represents local governments, on how we in the news media got this all wrong. So let's just listen to that soundbite.
There is public confusion over this. And so it says records that don't relate to the recipient's work or the decision making, but for whatever reason that has not resonated as the public reads those examples.
Because what Speaker Voss may or may not have attempted to do has nothing to do with what we do in the Public Records Board.
here was a little known board that didn't like the public scrutiny, didn't like all the cameras in the room this week, and reversed field. Put this in a larger context. Is there a groundswell of support out there for our current open records and transparency? Is this another winning issue for the Dems?
Oh, this is all about the sensitivity, if you will, right now about open records in the Capitol, especially with news media who are all on edge about what may be coming next or what they may be trying to do to kind of limit access to things. Because we've asked for these records before. We've asked for text messages, et cetera. So that's part of what's driving the coverage is, okay, well, this is in the context of all these little things that have added up to a big question mark of, well, what are you guys trying to do? And Republicans keep saying, we're not trying to change it now. You know, we realize we made a mistake with the package of changes in the budget, the Joint Finance Amendment. We pulled that back. No big changes. Although, by the way, we do think there should be some changes eventually, but nothing right now. It's all about that sensitivity, and there is not a lot of trust right now about what Republicans are trying to do or not do with open records laws.
Well, I was intrigued. I don't know if you did the story, but the Public Records Board was contacted, received 1,900 contacts saying, reverse this. So this is apparently a live issue out there.
Oh, and Democrats are trying to put in the context again of, okay, you've got open records, all these other transparency issues, what's going on with the Capitol. They're arrogant with power. I don't know if that is the winning issue for them come fall, but they will try and package it into a argument of these guys are out of touch. They're not looking out for you, looking out for themselves and special interests. Now, will it resonate? We'll see, but that's what they're trying to get at, if you will, with these things.
One development that I wonder whether it passes a smell test is the day after this innocuous Public Records Board makes this change, the governor's office cites it in denying access to records to the Wisconsin State Journal regarding Weedick.
You're such a cynic, Steve.
So, I just raised a question whether it passed the smell test. Coincidental?
Oh, yeah.
Public Board acts, next day, governor cites it. Anyway, moving on. Attorney General Schimmel, we had a chance to interview him yesterday, and on three things. I want to play a soundbite, but before I do, he said, number one, he supports the bill that would let those who have concealed weapon permits be on school grounds. Number two, it's time for governments, employers, other organizations to have run, hide, run, fight training. And number three, up to half of the Department of Criminal Investigation was assigned initially to the Lincoln Hills investigation. So before I have you talk about Schimmel, let's hear the Attorney General in his interview with Wisconsin Eye.
I think, again, the fear of people who have completed proper background checks, legally own their gun, have a concealed carry permit, those aren't the people we need to be afraid of. When we hear about school shootings, that's not the people we're worried about. It's a decision for businesses to make. You know, you want to do this for your employees. I certainly encourage businesses and public institutions like schools, it's worth giving your staff an idea of what you might want to do. Back in December, we had a moment where we had about 50 of our staff, half of all of the Division of Criminal Investigation was up at the two schools.
1 year after Schimmel takes office, JR, what do we know about Brad Schimmel and how he's running the office?
Well, one thing I've heard from folks who talk to him is if you look at his predecessor, J.B. Van Hollen, J.B. was often criticized by Republicans for not being essentially partisan enough, that he was, and if you talk to J.B., he'd say, I always made decisions based on the law, not politics and his personal opinions. At the same time, Democrats never gave him credit for that. They always saw him as still a partisan warrior, if you will, and so Van Hollen's kind of this no-win situation at times. Schimmel seems to be much more willing to pick a fight, if you will, or get involved in the nitty-gritty of some of these partisan issues. A good example is, look, a month or so ago, Michael Bloomberg's group ran those ads, TV ads about Schimmel because one of the AGs suing over the EPA rules on carbon emissions, right?
Yes.
If you look at his Twitter feed after that, his attitude was, bring it on. You know, bring it on. This guy from out of state's coming to Wisconsin, tell us what to do, bring it on. Much more of a kind of a ready to mix it up kind of approach, if you will, than Van Hollen maybe had. That's one big thing we've noticed about Schimmel since he took in office.
Well, another thing is he has made, and in his year-end public report, he has made open government, transparent government, a priority. That go back to that last-minute budget amendment. I mean, he came back and smacked him, said this is wrong immediately, and he's now got a public a public records guru, and he's been fairly responsive on the issue. But is this just a couple self-serving reporters wanting all the records in state government, JR? Oh,
you know, definitely he's been an advocate on open records, but then Democrats are going to ask, well, why isn't he giving one of these training tapes we wanted in the 2014 election?
There's that issue.
That he said, well, they shouldn't be out there because there's some sensitive law enforcement stuff on there. So, but for the most part, he has been a good advocate, if you will, an ally for those who like open records so far.
Yeah, but it seems to me that after a year, Schimmel has found his voice and is more comfortable in the job than mm-hmm. ever before. Okay, new topic. After the first of the year, we always get a spate of announcements of who's not running again. Mm-hmm. This week, Representative Dean Knutson, Republican from the 30th District, Hudson, announced. Let's talk about him first. I was surprised by that. Were you?
A little bit, in that if you look at Knutson's career, he came in the 2010 class.
Yes.
Got on joint finance not long after that. Kind of a nice player on finance, if you will, has very much an active voice on the committee. Also authored, co-authored the GAB bill, which split into two agencies. So he kind of made a name for himself. But if you look at this new breed of Republican lawmaker coming in the last couple cycles, they're much less likely to be looking to be here for the long term. They seem to be more like 4, 6, 8 years and go home. So now at times that's a little bit disruptive to the body because there are people who don't mind tearing the place down while they're here.
Yeah.
But Knutson's one of those ones who, this isn't his life calling to be in politics. He wanted to come do what he wanted to do and go home, and that's what he's doing essentially.
He also said he's not going to miss that three and a half hour drive in the winter between Madison and Hudson.
And don't forget, it's a job that pays, you know, $50,000, whatever it is, 49, somewhere in that neck of the woods.
Round it up, 50.
So you have to not only be here in the Capitol, but you're also going to fish fries back home. You're doing every parade, every Eagle Scout ceremony. I mean, it is not a job with a 9-to-5 clock, if you will.
Yeah.
Now, let's be honest. You can come down here Tuesday through Thursday and still go home and have, you know, plenty of time on your hands. But there are a lot of demands for what you have to do to keep in the office.
That's the issue of show horse versus workhorse. Go
That's
ahead.
Right. Now, for Republicans, Knutson's seat, it leans Republican. It is a presidential year, so you have to keep an eye on it. The bigger issue for them is a seat like this, you have to keep the home fire burning, if you will, unless Democrats find a really bad candidate and don't put much race. But it could draw money away from race X, Y, and Z that's more of a priority to keep. You just can't take your eye off the ball with a seat like that.
Yeah,
at this
I understand.
Point.
Also, I was surprised that first-term Representative Dave Heaton, a Republican from the 85th District in Wausau, mm-hmm. he's announced, officially he said, you know, I've got three young children, time away from them, I need to spend more time with my family. But is this a reflection that it's a presidential election year and you can get up to 20% more votes in a presidential election year, and he only won by 85 votes, and he was looking at a rematch with former Democratic Rep Mandy mm-hmm. Mandy Wright?
Well, what's interesting is Heaton came to Madison representing a Dem-leaning seat that he won in a Republican wave by just 85 votes against the lawmaker who, by the way, spent a good deal of October that year out and about with Dale Schultz rather than state talking about education policy rather than campaigning back home.
Yeah.
But he hasn't voted like somebody trying to hold on to a swing seat or a Dem-leaning seat. He's voted like pretty much down-the-line conservative. That's not going to make it easier to hold that seat come November for him. So in some ways, it's not a surprise leaving because he hadn't really laid a foundation to make the argument of, I'm an independent voice in Madison rather than I'm a Republican. Do you want a Republican or do you want a Democrat? That kind of argument. So there's that rub for him that makes sense that maybe it wasn't, you know, the most appealing thing in the world to go through that election. And oh, by the way, the only one I can think of that he really broke with party line was on the budget. That was one that he voted against, one of the 11 or 12 members. At the time, it was like, oh, well, that makes sense. He's kind of taken care of back home. Like, I've got the independent streak, but where else have the votes been, if you will, to set himself apart from the party line?
Yeah, I understand. Former Democratic Rep Mandy Wright, a former teacher, has announced she's going to run again. Mm-hmm. And then within minutes after Heaton says, I'm leaving, former conservative talk show host Pat Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider the 85th, that assembly district, one of the closest toss-up seats?
If you go look at the numbers top of the ticket, I think Obama won it like with 51 point something on the vote in 2012, which, and, you know, the whole universe of votes. So like it's a spread that it's a couple percentage points Democratic. There'll be some drop off from top of the ticket, but it should be a Dem seat in a presidential year. Now, in 2012, you had a three-way race with Wright, Schneider, and a Libertarian.
Yep.
She won by less than 1,000 votes. So it's not like it's a slam dunk for Democrats.
Right.
But they should, you know, if she keeps her eye on the ball, be in a good position to pick it, to win it back. Now, with Schneider, one thing came in 2012 was all of his comments on talk radio. I mean, let's be honest, talk radio hosts, they try to inflame things. They say controversial things. There was a treasure trove for Democrats to use against him. Now, he's saying that he's worked for Sean Duffy, congressman from Weston, last couple of years as an outreach person in the district. He's been out and about in the district. People see a different side of him. Now he's in that role, not the quasi entertainment role of talk show host. I don't know, though, that Democrats are going to say, well, that's all the past and we're going to forget about it. I am sure that they'll come back up this fall, the things you said before.
What are you hearing? Are we likely to get some more announcements of some eye-raising GOP members of the assembly that are stepping out?
At this point, the rumors are more about like a handful of people. And it's kind of the usual stuff. People have been there for a long time, who may not necessarily fit with the culture of the Capitol right now. It's a little more partisan, a little more hard-edged than it used to be 10, 15 years ago. People who don't really need the job, if you will, or get near retirement age. But it's not, from what I can tell so far, I'm not seeing a wave of retirements like we've seen in some cycles,
okay,
where a dozen members leave. Now, we still have plenty of time for that to change. So, but fundraising reports are due today for the last half of 2015.
Yes.
You may see some clues in there, though there are some members who don't really raise a lot of money in an off year. But if you're not raising any money, it raises the flag, well, what's this guy doing? Is he or she looking at running again?
Well, you know, I hate to stay away with rumors, but I'm going to ask you about this one, because Democratic Representative Mandela Barnes laying the groundwork to challenge Senator Lena Taylor.
That rumor's definitely been around, and I've heard it.
And the reason I'm taking it beyond rumor is I ran into Barnes yesterday in the Capitol, and I said, so are you going to take on Lena? And he just kind of, that's an interesting question, you know, and walked away in this, I'm thinking about it. So do you believe he's mulling that primary challenge?
A month ago, I wrote a story that he was laying the foundation to do it. Now, it's Milwaukee politics. But, you know, things can change in a heartbeat in Milwaukee. So
absolutely,
you have to keep a little fluid on that. But he's definitely interested, it seemed like, in definitely at least getting things in place. If he wants to pull the trigger, he can do it. Now, what will be interesting in that race, if it develops, is what's the argument going to be? Lena voted for concealed carry, voted for the Castle Doctrine. So will those be
she
votes?
She voted for Buck's funding, arena
will those,
funding.
Will those votes come back to haunt her in Milwaukee? Who would help her? That's another question. So a lot of times school choice gets involved in Milwaukee races if there's a school choice advocate, but she's not a big advocate of school choice. So what group would step forward to help either of them, to be honest? The low turnout election, there are a lot of dynamics at play in a race like that we'll be interested in watch.
Well, would this be an up or out move by Barnes?
Oh, he's got to give up his assembly seat to run against her. So he has to know, I've got a shot,
right,
or take a big risk and run against her.
Yeah. Okay, it's fascinating. Okay, topic five. JR, what do you think? Shall we put the best possible face on the Badger exam test results? 51% of Wisconsin students in grades 3 through 8 were proficient or advanced in English language arts. 43% did that well in math. Or shall we focus on the incredible achievement gap disparity? We're going to run the Journal Sentinel's gap showing that 8th grade white students on the Badger exam scored 58% on math, African American 8th graders 24%, and just one more example, 8th grade white students scored 49% and on, I might have gotten reversed, on English language, but only 9%. African Americans. I mean, and another thing, this is a Badger exam result. It's going away. We don't know the next set of criteria. K-12, the whole choice debate, the whole charter. What are your feelings on that?
The racial gap has been around since I got here almost 16 years ago.
And it's worsening.
It's not getting any better. So what's the answer to that? That becomes a question. What is the answer? And so far, they're throwing things out there. They're trying things. But it's hard to see in the results an answer that's working at this point.
Who's leading on this? Anybody? Is that the problem?
Evers at DPI, he's had an initiative about it. Republicans obviously believe in the school choice program. They believe in the effort to take over failing Milwaukee schools. That was in the budget. You know, gave that power to Abley to appoint somebody to lead that. So they're throwing things out there, trying to take it on, but the fruit's not being born yet at this point.
But our collective more than 40 years in the Capitol, we've seen no major progress closing the achievement gap.
No.
And in some categories, it is worse in the Madison School District than in the Milwaukee Public School District. Well, anyway, that last test results were not encouraging. Okay, what's politics? Stock picks rising.
Effigy mounds. So there was a bill out there that would basically create a path, if you will, to looking at an effigy mound, which are sometimes 1,000 years old, determine if there are any human remains there. If not, allow you to excavate and go forward. Robin Voss this week says not going to go anywhere this session, probably. The tribes rallied about it. I bring this up not really because that's such a winner, but it's indicative of a bigger thing happening right now in the Capitol, where you see all these bills coming out late in the session, which are priorities from people to it because of a constituency, because of a passion, whatever it is, that the clock is, the window is closing, if you will. The clock is running these things. Can they get them done? Yeah. And Voss has been knocking down the concealed carry in school, guns on college campuses, in buildings. He's saying, probably not going to happen, probably not going to happen, probably not going to happen. And you see that a lot because in the session, they figure out what do they want to get done. And oh, by the way, what's the last message you want to leave the voters before we go home? We want our last vote on whatever day to be about concealed carry in schools. Or we want to be about something positive that's not controversial and gives us more of a positive message, if you will, mm-hmm. before we leave.
Okay. And mixed, Don Schott.
Don Schott. Point nominated this week by President Obama at the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. This seat has been open since like 5 or 6 years now. Terrence Evans stepped
years.
Away, and then memory passed away, and I believe in 2011. U.S. Senators Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson have not gotten along on judicial nominations for a long time. They created a commission that paved the way for a couple that worked for a little bit, but this one's going to be a problem. This is why. There was a spat last year about who to send up as a finalist, if you will,
yes.
for this pick. The White House finally sends this down, and oh, by the way, it's a presidential year. There's the old Strom Thurmond rule in the U.S. Senate of after a certain date, it's not really set in stone what date it is, we're not doing any more nominations for the courts because they're lifetime appointments and this guy's almost out the door. So you have one Ron Johnson saying, I'm going to review the nomination, but I'm not there yet. Baldwin saying, let's go, let's get this done. It's a long time vacancy, so you need Johnson on board, number one. If he doesn't, it's a death knell for the nomination because you can't win without the sitting senator in your home state being on board with you. And then two, even if he gets there, he still needs the Republican majority to say, yeah, we're going to confirm a lifetime appointment for somebody from President Obama, not big fans of his, for the appeals court in Chicago. Maybe not going to happen this year.
With that context, that's why I understand he's mixed. Falling, Representative Gannon?
Bob Gannon. So we've been around the Capitol for a long time.
Yes.
I've seen a lot of stuff on the floor,
yes.
a lot of arguments. Mm-hmm. The bird's a new one. I'm not going to lie about that. But it's interesting, you talk to Republicans, they kind of felt like he was baited into it. Like Democrats knew if they pushed enough buttons that he would do something on the floor.
They would light him up?
Yeah.
They just didn't know how we'd how
Gannon's
he would
had
respond.
Problem. Gannon's had an issue with Barker before. Remember back this summer?
Yes.
Gannon said, I will not vote for a budget without a significant prevailing wage reform. Barker accused him of log rolling, and Gannon kind of gave it to him on the floor a little bit there. There's a little bit of tension there. So, and Gannon is representative of this. I've talked about these conservatives coming saying, look, I want to change this place. You know, they don't like a certain direction the state's going. They don't, taxes are too high. Spending is too much. We need to shake this place up and do something different. And along the way, they're not really too worried about niceties, you know, for a couple of different reasons. And one of them is they're not going to be here forever. If you look back years ago when you first started coming to the Capitol, it was a career for a lot of people. There was an incentive, if you will, to kind of play nice
yeah.
and get along.
Yeah.
The incentive is gone now.
Okay.
So I'm not saying this is a result of that, but it just losing your temper line on the floor is not becoming, if you will, a state lawmaker.
Okay. Okay, there are three odds and ends that I want to get to before we end the show. The first one is you just reported on the governor's state campaign mm-hmm. fundraising. So give us the totals.
About 514 and change last 6 months of 2015. Remember, half of that he was on the presidential trail still. That is, if I got my numbers off the top of my head, his second worst fundraising total.
Because this is just his state campaign fund.
State campaign. After the 2012 recall election, he raised like 473 and change.
Yeah.
But that was a six-month period where he just shattered campaign finance records in the recall election, and people are focused on the 2012 fall elections.
Okay.
So it's obvious that he's getting his feet back under the state account. Only had $20,000 in change left in the fund at the end. Now, Walker is last reported he's reorganized his state campaign team, brought the team back together. People like Stephen Thompson, Keith Gilkes, R.J. Johnson being a senior consultant. So the team's back in place. He's getting organized to go forward. But you know, the state money's not really flowing just yet.
Okay.
We should, by the end of the month, though, have a new federal report to the FEC detailing how he's doing paying off his debt from the presidential campaign, which some reports put it at $1 million when he dropped out there. in September.
Okay, I just want to come back. What the governor's state campaign fund had on January 1, $20,200.
Yep, roughly.
Not much.
No.
Okay.
He is the best fundraiser I have ever seen in Wisconsin politics. I mean, the guy is a machine. If he wants to spigot on, he can. He also has, it's very expensive, but he's got a great mailing list that he's built up over the years. He can tap that time and time again to bring money in. So if he fires the jet up, okay, it'll come in come July when the next report comes
out. Okay, the second item I want to get to quickly. The Supreme Court gave what to three local prosecutors in terms of this ongoing, never-ending John Doe debate?
John Doe 2, Milwaukee, Dane, Iowa counties were granted, the DAs that were granted standing, if you will, to take the case, take it over, and if they want to, they don't have to, but they want to, appeal the U.S. Supreme Court. So they have that standing now to do that because Mayor Francis Schmidt, special prosecutor who was overseeing John Doe for five counties, mm-hmm, his appointment was deemed to be invalid, so he's done essentially with the Supreme Court's concern. These guys had to take it up if they wanted to have an appeal. Also in that decision, the justices denied a request from Milwaukee County DA's office, well, several employees of it, to preserve records they have from John Doe too. Remember, they're being sued by Cindy Archer, a former Walker aide from his days as Milwaukee County exec and then initially as governor, accusing them of malicious prosecution because they raided her home, took a bunch of documents. She's saying she's investigated for political reasons. They need these documents, they say, to defend themselves against that case.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court said, no, we're putting it all in one big file under seal, the clerk of courts for us, end of story. So now these guys have to, if they want, you know, hope to get a federal court to say, no, you can keep this stuff to defend yourselves in the lawsuit. That'll be interesting to watch. Now you're getting state court versus federal court possibly.
Yes.
Fun times for lawyers.
But basically, the bottom line is the Supreme Court gave these three local prosecutors the ability, the standing, that mm-hmm, legal term, to file their appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yes.
Okay, finally, what are you going to look for in the governor's central theme of the State of the State speech next Tuesday, 7 p.m.?
He's given us a couple of hints. Interviewed him last week. He said, look, you know, we need a vision for Wisconsin 20 years down the road. So he's already talked about doing a listening tour, if you will, around the state and share, as well as listen to people, what he thinks we should be at in 2036. That's a long way away, doesn't it?
Yes.
Could be my retirement year. So anyway, he's going to go out there and do this listening tour. He's also talked about his college affordability package. That's been part of the speech.
Yep.
And jobs and the economy will definitely be part of it. Governor Walker has been talking about skills gap for a while now. It will come up again. And the other thing he probably will want to do is, remember, he signed that budget July 13th, whatever it was. The next day, he announced for president. Usually with Walker, you see him go out to a statewide tour and tout what he views as the successes of the budget. You don't have the opportunity to do that with this budget. I get the impression that they're going to try and use this as an opportunity as well to kind of remind people, hey, we did this, this, and this, and we're proud of it. We think it's a good thing, and try and tell the story to help get Walker back, if you will, on his feet. Now, one thing people are waiting for as well is, when's the Walker vision going to kick in? You know, he's back from the presidential race. It's been since September now.
He's listening,
but that's not the Walker we're used to. We're used to a Walker who has his, you know, vision, who goes out and says, I'm going to do this, and then go sell it to people.
Yeah.
We're waiting for that. When's it going to come? My guess is going to be in the budget next year. If you think about it, if Walker uses speech on Tuesday to say, I want these six bills passed now. Lawmakers are going to say, Governor, we've got a month left. You know, it's kind of tough to squeeze. 2 months left. It's tough to squeeze that in. He will probably push for past initiatives. Hey, let's get this stuff rolling. But the real thing for Walker is to watch next year's State of the State address and next year's budget. That might be the beginning of the Walker vision for the end of this term and maybe a run for a third term.
Okay, here's my prediction. He's been working with Ray Cross on new ways whereby some of our high school seniors could get both high school credits and UW system credits to graduate in even 3 years in some of these infotech programs. So, I mean, that's a big part of it. Okay, number of times in the speech he refers to our unemployment rate at 4%.
At least a couple.
Four. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for January 15th.